we've talked about how warfarin works and what it's used for, let's move into slide 12 with the side effects of warfarin. Bleeding is the most common side effect of warfarin use. Minor bleeding occurs in greater than 15% of patients, and major bleeding ranges from 1% in carefully managed patients to greater than 10% in patients monitored in less structured environments. So obviously, our goal is to better manage our patients so we can decrease the risk of bleeding. On slide 13, let's talk a little bit more about bleeding. Minor bleeding is common among warfarin users, even when they are within their therapeutic range. And this may manifest itself as bleeding gums while patients are brushing their teeth, easy bruising, and bleeding from a small cut. Typically, this is nothing to be concerned about unless the bleeding becomes more severe. So patients have gums that won't stop bleeding, bruises that grow for no reason, or a cut that is still bleeding after 10 minutes. All of these things warrant further investigation because they may need adjustments to their warfarin therapy. On slide 14, we need to spend a few minutes talking about serious bleeding. The following table shows symptoms that require prompt medical attention because they may be signs of serious bleeding. And this is divided into two sections, bleeding that can be seen and bleeding that is felt. Bleeding that can be seen can be vomiting blood or material that looks like coffee grounds, which can indicate a bleed in the upper gastrointestinal tract. Also, stools that are bloody or are dark and tar-like, which can be a bleed in the lower gastrointestinal tract. Urine that is red or unusually dark. Or patients who are coughing up phlegm or any secretions that are bloody. All of these need to be investigated. In addition, we have bleeding that is felt. And it's said in this way just because many patients will not necessarily realize that they could be bleeding. And these symptoms include severe abdominal pain, persistent headaches, confusion or decreased alertness, or dizziness or weakness. And once again, these could all be signs of serious health conditions, and patients really need to be evaluated as soon as possible if they're exhibiting any of these things. On slide 15, I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about falls and warfarin. Patients who are on warfarin should always be assessed for bleeding following a fall or a hit on the head. And of course, we're looking for visible bleeding and how severe that is, because we all know there's a big difference between a small cut on the forehead and a larger wound that's bleeding more severely. We also want to be assessing for symptoms of internal bleeding, so that bleeding that patients may feel but may not attribute to a bleeding event. Of course, when any patient falls, there should always be an incident report. And in this incident report, we really need to be documenting the fall and that the patient is on warfarin. And finally, we always need to be doing some sort of follow-up, either by phone or in person. And in the follow-up, we need to assess for symptoms of bleeding that may not have been present before. So maybe a patient fell in the morning and said that they were feeling okay, but when we call them at 6 o'clock in the evening, they're complaining of some abdominal pain. Well, they need to be worked up for that, so we should always be doing some sort of a follow-up. In addition, depending on the situation, we may need to have some sort of nurse referral policy, depending on who's seeing the patient, whether it's a therapist or somebody else involved in care. Maybe a nurse needs to be evaluating that patient just to make sure nobody else has missed any signs that could be significant. So on slide 16, we've been talking for the past few minutes about bleeding, and now the real question is, how do we minimize the risk of bleeding? Well, we do this through frequent monitoring. And there are two ways we monitor. We have prothrombin time, which is PT, and this is going to measure how long it takes for the blood to clot. However, we're not really used to seeing PT values. Typically, we see international normalized ratios, or INRs. And an INR is really just a standardized way of reporting the results of a PT test. And this is just so an INR of 2 will mean the same thing from one laboratory to another. So it's always going to mean the same thing, regardless of where the patient had their blood tested, whereas a PT is going to vary from patient to patient, depending on where they had that drawn. So on slide 17, a little bit more information on INR. There are some specific INR goals, and typically the INR should be between 2 and 3. However, for some patients, the INR goal will be a little higher, between 2.5 and 3.5, and this is usually for patients who have artificial heart valves or recurrent class, or some other condition that warrants a little bit higher target. However, INR should really never be any higher than 3.5, so that's kind of the cutoff. As far as frequency of INR testing goes, INR should be obtained at least once a month. However, we do want to get them more frequently when we have changes in dose, diet, and other medications. And we know that patients who get their INR tested more than once a month do better with therapy. However, at a minimum, they really, really need to be getting that INR drawn once a month so we can see how they're doing.